Welcome to the EBXML and Related Technologies Awareness Series. My name is Sascha Schlegel. I'm working for Siphon Commerce X-Ray. Today is June 5th, 2006. Today's topic is the Universal Business Language Small Business Subset. My guests today are Stephen Green and Ken Holman. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Sascha.
And hi, Ken.
Hello, Sascha. How are you today?
Steve is working for a local authority in the UK. Steve has been the person who initiated the small business subset initiative within the Universal Business Language Technical Committee. Steve, please add a little bit more about yourself, about your background.
Yes, I've been working in local government, but I've also been involved with several standards, particularly for e-procurement. And that meant since 2003, I was working with Universal Business Language, helping to develop it as a global standard.
Thank you. And Ken, I know from Ken, Ken is working for a software company called Crane Soft Rights out of Canada. Ken is a known authority in the XML scene, and in particular, he seems to be very into XML transformation technologies amongst many other parts. Ken, please add a little bit more about yourself.
Well, thank you, Sascha. I was very privileged to be on the committee that developed the XML recommendation from the SGML recommendation. I was on the special interest group for doing SGML on the web. I was then the founding chairman of the XML Conformance Committee and then the founding chairman of the XSLT Conformance Committee. And yes, I have been involved in the standards arenas for quite a long time. I got involved with UBL quite early, and I've been leading some of the efforts in the human interface side, the presentation of forms and such. I've been co-chairing the UBL SBS following Steve's direction and Steve's vision for where the SBS can go. And our company is starting to offer UBL hands-on training classes starting in August of this year, 2006. Thanks for having me participate today, Sarge.
Thank you very much. So let's start with the question, what is the Universal Business Language? Steve.
Yes, UBL, as it's called, started in OASIS, the standards group consortium, and it started as a payload for EBXML, which is the e-business framework using XML. Now, at the beginning, UBL was started using an existing standard called XCBL, and special permission was acquired to use that to reduce the amount of work to bring the standard to a pretty good state of maturity very quickly. And throughout the development of UBL, it's always sought to be compliant with the EBXML-related specifications. Most of those specifications are now fully standardized under ISO 15000. The final piece of the jigsaw is just being standardized at this moment in OASIS.
And Steve, UBL 1.0 was out. What was the result of this effort?
The UBL 1.0 was standardized completely in September 2004, but that version just included a set of procurement documents. It also allowed you to design your own standards following the same design rules for the XML side of things, which are called the naming and design rules. And the work's now continuing, and there's a large expansion in the number of documents. It now includes cataloging and also transport documents.
Thank you. And Ken, can you tell us why the XML technology was the basis for the UBL work?
Well, XML had some design principles that satisfy the global nature that we want to use, of how we want to use UBL. XML is application independent, product independent, platform independent, and most importantly, vendor independent. It's a representation of a collection of information in a stream of data. What's interesting about this stream is that it is simultaneously machine processable as well as human readable. The information in this stream is organized as a hierarchy, a kind of tree shape. There's a root. It's an upside-down tree. There's a root at the top of the tree, and you break out into branches of information. These branches branch down farther and farther into smaller pieces of information until you get to the leaves of the tree, where you have at the base some text, and this text represents some information items in the hierarchy. And every branch of these trees has a label, and the label is a mnemonic of some kind that is a signal to processing systems about what the information is just by the label. And then it's up to programs to interpret the semantics of the information based on the labels that are found in the XML files.
Okay, so does it mean that as part of the UBL result, they produced a list of XML schemas?
Very much so, and it's the XML schemas that define those labels that I was talking about in the tree, because the experts in UBL pulled together the collection of information items that are they felt were critical, the core critical concepts for business documents. They came up with mnemonic labels for each of these business concepts, these business semantics. And by coming up with a set of naming and design rules, they effectively push the button, and out of this collaboration effort comes the description of an XML document model. And that formalism that is used to describe the document model is an XML schema. And the syntax used for this expression is the W3C schema technology that comes from the World Wide Web Consortium. Now, having defined this formalism as a schema, the interoperability between systems is achieved because each of the systems can follow the constraints in the schemas and know how to first recognize the labels and then pass on the information associated with those labels to their respective applications for acting on the information. And since it's all available in clear text, even the schemas are human legible as well as the document themselves being human legible.
Thank you. These universal business language business documents, there are the invoice, the purchase order confirmations, those kind of business documents, where are they coming from? Are they coming from the paper-based documents? Are the roots of these documents in the paper-based documents, Steve?
Well, there is a long heritage to this, and the original standard that was developed into UBL, XCBL, that did have some inheritance of EDI standards, as they were called, including EDIFACT and X12. But nevertheless, the aim of UBL was to essentially cover the same types of documents as are used in paper-based processes. So this was a slight change to the existing XML standards. The documents, the order, invoice, and the like, and now with version 2, are going to be added credit note and so on, and also way bills and other transport documents. All of these documents are typically found in paper-based systems. Some of those documents also found in the more electronic version of electronic procurement, which is based around EDI.
So, Steve, what are your goals if people, organizations agree to use the same business documents, what can you achieve if the more people agree to this? What will you achieve in the end? What's the advantage of using this standard?
Well, there's been a continual progress towards allowing anybody to send anybody else a invoice, say, and for the receiver to be able to process that electronically, automatically, without having to reprogram their system or design it especially for the exact document. So it should be possible to send an invoice to anybody and not have to tell them what you mean by an invoice and what you mean by each of the elements within the invoice. It should be that systems already know what to expect when they're receiving an invoice. That sounds quite simple, but in fact it's taken a long time to get to anything like that situation. And there is some hope that with UBL it could be truly universal and that almost all systems would be able to support it. But this is a goal. There are existing problems still to be overcome.
I'd like to add that this global interchange without planning ahead, I've been referring to this as the serendipity factor of UBL. I think one of the goals we should be able to reach with UBL is that in a trading scenario, two people have agreed to do documents and they're going back and forth, but the serendipity of being able to take one of your documents and send it to a recipient who you've never dealt with before and have them accept that business document and act on it because the whole concept of UBL has been deployed worldwide, I think that's going to be the success of UBL.
There have been other standards here before, such as EDI, the Electronic Data Interchange. What have been the problems or issues with EDI installations?
Okay. EDI wasn't actually a single standard. It was a way to produce standards. And each industry took the principles of EDI and applied them to their specific business processes and came up with something slightly different for each industry. And we call these vertical industry standards. With UBL, the aim has been to produce something that we call horizontal. So the same sort of document should be generally understood no matter what industry is using it. There may be needs for customization, tailoring the original documents to the specific requirements of the industry. But nevertheless, the underlying semantics about what a tag means, say, in a document, such as a party or an address, should be the same pretty much in each scenario.
Ken, if you see that EDI was then turning into vertical solutions, and what you see UBL, is it, how can it achieve to be on a horizontal line so that it's applicable for each industry?
Well, document-oriented interchange does accomplish the same objective as the message-oriented interchange that you see in EDI. But what really distinguishes the use of XML from these hard encoded and customized binary messages for EDI is the text nature, the fact that you can actually see the clear text streamed in the content of the document, and the serendipitous use that I mentioned earlier is supported because a recipient of an invoice document can actually pull it up into a simple text editor and examine the content that's under each of the labels and go to the UBL documentation for the mnemonics of those labels and understand in actual multiple languages, because we have data dictionaries published in many languages about what the mnemonics represent from a business concept, and people can even do it by hand. Now, this sounds like a stretch, but there are free tools out there that if someone does go in and tweak something by hand. They can use free tools to validate that what they've done is correct. And there's an important parallel here. Back in the 80s, there was a lot of interest in hypertext, and there were experts out there trying to design the best, most feature complete hypertext systems that would allow people to associate information and create global networks of hypertext information. And what happened was this group of scientists in Switzerland pulled together a very simple format for associating the kinds of documents that they were representing, and I'm speaking here of HTML. And in those early days of HTML, the hypertext experts dismissed it. It was just too unsophisticated to meet the world's needs for hypertext that they were just really intimate with, because they'd been studying the hypertext problem for decades, and they just felt this HTML was too simple. It wasn't going to solve the problems. But it was so simple to use that everyone was ready to use it, and there were free tools coming out that supported it. People learned how to use HTML just with copy and paste, and they jumped on this hypertext bandwagon, and they started changing the expression of their problems so that a simple and easy to use and freely available technology could be deployed to solve their problems. And the result is the World Wide Web, a global hypertext system usable by anyone, not because it was full-featured and the theoretical system that the hypertext experts expected, but because it was simple to use. Now, this should happen with UBL. Rather than coming up with a complete solution that solves all of the complexities and features of electronic commerce, we're going to have a straightforward implementation of e-commerce business documents that people can use in a straightforward fashion. There are extension points that they can exploit if they want to add richer information, but the base documents themselves should be easy to use. The committee will be supplying sample documents. People can cut and paste portions of an invoice from a sample document into their own invoice kind of document and muddle their way through to making a valid document that represents their invoice concept and send it without even using a piece of software to create it. This was done with HTML. It was also done in typesetting. It was also done in the 60s with operating systems. Make things easy to use, and people will change the way they have to solve their problems in order to exploit something that is free and easy to use.
So what I hear here is that what we aim for is to make business-to-business as easy as we've seen the web growing with simple HTML web pages.
Absolutely, because HTML was made simple enough that anyone can use it, and UBL's base concepts are simple enough that if people need to fill out a three-line item invoice with a total amount and a tax amount from a supplier to a buyer, and the buyer is insisting on receiving a UBL instance for that, it can be done.
Okay. And Steve, so you started the UBL Small Business Subset Initiative. Please tell us your motivations to start this small business subset.
Well, coming from a local government background, I've been used to dealing with fairly small businesses, and the capabilities of such businesses in terms of handling even XML documents, that in itself it can be a challenge to many businesses. The problems that they would face are such the UBL really needs to be absolutely as simple as possible, but to still have much of the functionality that they'll need. And I did feel that UBL was trying to be so horizontal that it was having to provide in the document all sorts of things that a small business typically wouldn't be able to manage anyway. So So I felt that there was a need to define a subset in some way. It would be nice if you could just have a simple invoice that everybody understood and that most people, that would represent the actual requirements of most people. Instead, in an invoice, you have shipping information, you have the possibility of adding discounts at line level, various things that, many people's systems wouldn't necessarily even want to be able to handle. So to provide something that is a subset that, represents the needs of particularly small businesses, even single users, such as sole traders, this was, to me, the real need to bring things away from just the large businesses being able to adopt electronic commerce.
Okay, and I think it's very important to mention that if somebody is deciding to use this small business subset and creates the UBL small business subset invoice, that invoice is still indeed a valid UBL invoice.
Yes, the pressure has often been on to create what people would call a customization, which would be a restriction of all of the contents of a typical invoice in UBL, but it would be a separate standard in its own right. And so it wouldn't be a UBL invoice, it would be a UBL small business invoice, say. Now that was what we wanted to avoid. So there's a thing in an invoice using XML that's called the namespace. And that says, this is exactly the language that I'm using for this invoice. Now, the idea was that we wouldn't change that, that people could still use a UBL invoice and say it's a UBL invoice, and yet have some way of saying to their trading partners, but we only want you to use these parts of a UBL invoice when you're sending something to us. So the invoice they receive is a fully fledged, proper UBL invoice, but not all of it is being used. Only the bits that their system can understand, because the danger is that I might receive something that I can't understand, and yet is important to the transaction that invoice represents. So I want to avoid that. I want to only be receiving the things that I understand. And if there is anything else being sent to me, I want it understood that my system probably can't read it. So we define UBL, small business subset, as a definition of those parts of a UBL document that the receiver can understand and that the sender has confidence that the receiver will process. But yes, a UBL small business subset invoice is, by definition, a UBL invoice. There is no difference.
You already mentioned in your experience you were working, you had interactions with the very small kinds of businesses. So who do you think the end users of the UBL SBS going to be?
A lot will depend on finance package software vendors. Most small businesses probably limit their accounting procedures to spreadsheets and traditional accountancy tools. A fairly large percentage of those also use typical off-the-shelf small business finance packages. Now, these packages often allow a business to send and receive an XML-based electronic document. So the pressure will be on to see that those vendors do support UBL. And hopefully with the large amount of government adoption that's happening around the world, especially in Northern Europe, there will be pressure on vendors to support the UBL documents. Nevertheless, there are going to be many small businesses who have their own in-house development teams. Perhaps this is the exception rather than the rule these days, but I certainly have come across many of those, and I come from one of those myself. So for those people, there will need to be clarity in the specification to allow them to program their systems to handle and to send UBL documents.
In the end, do the end users really know that what they're exchanging are UBL SBS invoices or purchase orders, or it's going to be just transparent to them?
Well, there are various ways to solve this problem, and my favorite solution, I must say, is the EBXML framework for which UBL was designed. And this framework allows you to specify to a trading partner how you wish them to send you a document and how you will be sending them a document. And in that exchange of terms, as it were, of trading agreements, you can specify that your documents should be using the small business subset. And we've been working with some of the people in EBXML to help to ensure that the EBXML framework does support the specification of the use of a small business subset.
A question probably always going to come up is that if somebody looks at or an organization or an industry looks at a UBL document and it says, we need some additional information exchange that should be part of that document, or in our industry it's not common to exchange that kind of information, they want to get rid of it. How can people go about that kind of questions? Question for Ken.
Well, there are new features in UBL 2.0, in particular the extension point that we've defined in UBL 2.0. This will allow a community of users of UBL to define their own structures underneath the extension point that won't violate those schemas I mentioned earlier that are being standardized for UBL. So this extended UBL instance is still considered a UBL instance from a validation point of view. And the common bits that are in the UBL schemas should still be filled out by these users so that we can preserve the serendipity factor of being able to send a UBL document to a recipient who won't know anything about the extensions, but because the extension users have used the core UBL, they still can access that information in the core UBL. However, within a community of users, they now have access to their own extension information underneath this flexible extension point. And they can validate their documents underneath that extension point. They can get access perhaps to additional line item detail. I could imagine maybe the aerospace industry coming up with an extension point definition that has a lot more detail in their line items than UBL has for the generic or for the core UBL document. And they still have an obligation, users of extensions still have an obligation to fulfill the information requirements for the base UBL or the core UBL and only put into the extension area the stuff that is meaningful to them in addition to the core. Therefore, the serendipity factor allows others to continue to use the invoice, but within a community of users, they have their own rules and their own opportunities to take advantage of the information under the extension points.
So a question I would have then is, how will you not end up with the same circumstances that there are industry-specific views of individual UBL documents?
Oh, but there may very well be industry views of UBL documents. And that's the nice thing about the flexibility of UBL. Under these wildcard extension points, an industry can define an additional level of detail that is meaningful to them without violating the level of detail that all systems that support UBL should support. So a vendor or say a vendor in the aerospace industry is using the Aerospace Extended UBL in order to do their transactions with all their line level detail, they can now send a UBL invoice outside of that industry to another UBL system that will ignore all of the finer aerospace line extension details that are no interest just for the result of getting paid, because the invoice satisfies the core UBL or the SBS UBL portion that is all of the core information needed to affect the transaction. So the business document component defined by UBL is satisfied, and the industrial component of the invoice is kept within a community of users without breaking other systems, without breaking the serendipity factor of another system being able to take that highly complex aerospace invoice and still be able to work with the simple UBL core.
Okay. If the UBL SBS package, what does it include? What's the result of your UBL SBS work?
Well, essentially, it includes a list of all of the elements which comprise the subset. And there's a separate list for each document because some of the shared components may need a different subset depending on which document you're using. In addition to that, there is a set of rules which are just two rules, so it's fairly easy to read and understand, hopefully. And these rules relate to the list. Essentially, they boil down to somebody sending a subset has to bear in mind that anything that isn't part of the subset that they still send in the document could be ignored by the processor at the receiving end. And likewise, they have the confidence that the receiving end will process everything that is in the subset as is seen fit for business purposes. So that's the two rules. We also have some other helpful files which allow people to more easily implement the subset within an EBXML framework. And the reason we added these files was to allow people a way to specify to trading partners their wish to be using the subset in documents that are exchanged.
Sasha, when we created the SBS, we chose to express the catalog of elements and attributes that are part of the SBS in a validation agnostic manner, where we don't want to change the schemas. We don't want to publish new schemas as if to imply that these schemas replace the UBL schemas. So what we've done is we have designed an XML vocabulary to catalog the elements and attributes, and because it's in XML, it's machine processable. So applications can read this XML expression of the catalog of elements and attributes, and programs then can programmatically decide whether the piece is inside the fence described by Stephen or is it outside the fence. And that way the sender and receiver can meet the expectations as described by Stephen. We call these artifacts the XPath files. And the normative XPath file is an XML document of the catalog, and there is a text rendition, which is very easy for people to read. People who've never seen schema documentation or schema expressions before, they can read these XPath files and intuitively understand what we're trying to express about the hierarchy of information. And then there are some diagnostic instances as well that people can use for style sheets and other machine processing in order to confirm that they're working with the information in the subset.
Thank you. What are other current topics within the UBL SBS committee?
Well, I can talk to the code lists.
Yes.
There's been a long problem with what are called controlled vocabularies or code lists. These are the tables of fixed values from which users make a selection. And if you think about country codes or state codes, these standardized values represent the value set for an information item. Now, a schema expression allows one to enumerate all of the values for a document, but it is all of the values for every use of an information item all over the document. And this global document scope sometimes is just too much. And if coded values are encoded in the schema and two trading partners have to extend the values needed for their documents, we're not trying to change the way companies do business. We're just trying to give them structures in which they express their business information so that they're still successful. In the past, code list values were expressed in schemas, and this presented the two problems for trading partners. First of all, trading partners could not add to the list without violating the schema. And second of all, trading partners couldn't use different sets of values, different state codes or different currency codes at different parts of the document. So, recognizing these limitations, the new UBL package documents a methodology whereby trading partners can now interchange two kinds of information about code lists. First is a set of files describing the coded values themselves, and there are standards developments in progress that will standardize the expression of these sets of codes. But tying this together is an association file, the code list value association, where for the information items, again described by XPath, XPath values as described in the XPath files, two trading partners can agree that at these following parts of the document, the following sets of codes, be they supplied by UBL or just decided between two trading partners or even growing as their interchange requirements change, they grow the values in these coded sets. They can still interchange without ever changing the schema. They interchange the new sets of coded values, the new association contexts for these coded values. They press a button, and out of the methodology comes a Schematron file. Now, Schematron is a very interesting technology. It's an ISO standardized technology. It's part of the DSDL, the Document Schema Definition Languages Standard. Schematron is identified by ISO/IEC 19757 Part 3. And 19757 is DSDL, and Part 3 is Schematron. And with these context associations and the Schematron files, you can do value validation between trading partners without violating the definition of UBL. Once again, we have dressed in this system the flexibility needed by trading partners to both use a system that's simple and add to it in a way that doesn't violate the rules of UBL, but still allows them to express the values they need for their business. We could never guess all of the values needed for all businesses. So in these constrained vocabularies, two trading partners or a community of trading partners can decide the values for themselves. It's really quite a new approach towards code lists, and it's catching the eye of a number of different development projects.
And all this probably has to be very seamless to the end user, and the tools should take care of all these technical details.
Well, that's the nice thing about XML. There's a lot of free software out there that people can deploy. There's commercial software for those organizations that need the kind of backup of supported software that sometimes they mandate for their use. But it's all based on standards. Schematron is an ISO standard. And so the expression of requirements as Schematron expressions allows different implementations of Schematron to be used based on different companies' IT requirements and their infrastructure requirements and still be able to take advantage of these international standards.
Mm-hmm. All this sounds very, very promising, and I'm sure the world is happy with easier ways to do business-to-business electronic commerce. Steve, in the UBL SBS work, you also included the universal business process. What are the universal business process?
Well, it's interesting that many standards using XML have all found it necessary to define business processes in some way. And this allows people to be very unambiguous when they enter into an agreement to use the documents as to exactly how those documents are going to be used. For instance, if I send you an invoice and I don't hear anything back from you within a certain time, am I to assume that you've not received the invoice? If I can make some arrangement where if I don't get some sort of signal to say that you've had the invoice and that you've processed it successfully within a certain time, then I'm to ignore that invoice and send it to you again, then that gives me a far more robust solution and framework in which to trade. So as other documents, standards bodies have seen the need to do this, so UBL has come across this requirement too. And this was something that UBL rather resisted in the early stages, where it was expected that the documents themselves were sufficient and sufficiently well understood within a procurement scenario to not need very elaborate definitions of how they were to be used. However, in order to fit into the EBXML framework and other similar frameworks, it is necessary at some point to formalize what you mean by, say, an invoice being sent or an order being sent and an order response being returned. Now, with the small business subset, this is even more important because you need to not only say what message is being sent and what signals are going to be returned, but you also need to define clearly and unambiguously to the person you're trading with, the party you're trading with, that they are to send you documents in response complying with the small business subset. So essentially, this semantic aspect gets incorporated into the business process itself. Now, this was very interesting because business processes typically were agnostic about the semantics of the documents. It was sufficient just to say that a document was an invoice. Now, this requirement for subsetting introduced a slightly new aspect to this, and we worked together with the EBXML Business Process Technical Committee to ensure that a way was found to specify the need for a subset in the business process itself. And then subsequently, trading partners can point to that process and indicate that the process that they're intending to be using does include the use of the subset. So, first of all, you need to have a business process that is publicly hosted. If you're to have a horizontal use of UBL, so if you want there to be anybody sending anybody else a UBL document and also saying that they need to have a subset sent back to them in the response message, you need to define a process in some standard way that all systems can understand, and then not only have that standard available, but have the document definition that you've defined hosted as publicly as possible. And so we added the definitions for the business processes actually to the UBL Small Business Subset package so that they would be hosted together with the subset on the OASIS website. Subsequently, we realized that people could be benefited by providing for them templates which they could use to produce local documents which would indicate to potential trading partners their requirement to use the subset or perhaps just to use a more general UBL document, not necessarily subsetted. And we've provided a whole set of templates which Sasha himself has kindly developed for us to provide people with samples that they can easily edit to then post on either in a registry, repository, or just to post on their website in some way or to make somehow available to trading partners so that trading partners can know exactly how they will be trading. It's even more interesting that some of the main software that now recognizes EBXML messages and EBXML framework artifacts, that this software can just take one of these documents in and immediately start to handle messages in an appropriate manner. So this very much simplifies the whole process of trading electronically. And we have, in fact, Sasha has kindly tested some of the EBXML artifacts that we've developed for the small business subset and for UBL in general, and tested them with both open source and commercially available products, a sample of those, and found that they do indeed process these messages very nicely.
Yes, I can only add that this is a very good combination of the universal business language and other EBXML components. Okay, we're coming to the end of the interview. So if you don't mind to summarize, express your thoughts and ideas of universal business language, small business subset, and B2B in general, please do so. Ken, if you would like to have your last say?
Well, from the technology side, I want to just support this choice of using XML. I think that any investment that any newcomer to this technology makes in the XML technology itself will be transferable to other projects and other systems that will be coming to their attention in the future. Investing in UBL or investing in the skills needed to work with UBL will have a long-term payoff even beyond UBL, all because UBL is based on these international standards. And I think that an organization looking at their human resources investment, at their training investments, at their technology investments, they can't lose to implement and invest in the use of international standards. And UBL has taken advantage of the technologies that are XML-based, and are, as a group, we are reaping the benefits of having chosen to use these standards because they were well-designed to meet the kinds of goals for global document interchange. So at a technical level, the components are all there for interchange.
Thank you very much. And Steve, if you would like to summarize, have had a last word in this interview.
Okay, thank you, Sasha. All people seeking to implement UBL at some point will need to consider the provision of a subset. This could be developed within their own industry, perhaps by a standard body in that industry, or perhaps by a government agency, possibly for the whole of a public sector, as we've been seeing in some of the Scandinavian countries. But there is also the need for a more horizontal subset that small applications can invest in, and with some confidence that there will be widespread use. This is what we've sought to provide in the small business subset. And we've also sought to provide it as a way that satisfies the lowest common denominator of requirements. Small businesses, perhaps medium-sized businesses, even sole traders who just wish to be able to produce a simple document and receive a simple document with the minimum of programming. So with this small business subset for UBL 1.0, I believe it is now more likely that people will be able to use UBL pretty much out of the box. And it should be also considered that, as Ken has said, there will be the need to design code lists to define what codes exactly will be acceptable in those documents. So I wouldn't want to say that it is completely finished, and there is still some work for developers to do there.
Okay, thank you very much. Ken, Steve, thank you very much for the interview.
Well, thank you, Sasha, for bringing us together to talk about this. Steve and I have enjoyed working together on this, and we bring two different perspectives to the problem, and we've meshed well together, and I feel really proud that I've had the opportunity to work with Stephen on this.
Well, likewise, I feel very proud to have worked with Ken and with Sasha, with yourself.
So, thank you.
And thank you, Sasha, for all your help with the small business subset.
No problem.
Thank you, Ken.
Thank you.